Hi, welcome to Digital Nomad Stories, the podcast. My name is Anne Klaassen and I am your host. I started this podcast because podcasts have literally changed my life. Because of podcasts that I listened to years ago, I realized it is possible to live as a digital nomad, travel the world while working remotely. I since have started my own business and I travel the world. I am living the dream and I want to share my story, but also the stories of other digital nomads with you, so that hopefully you get inspired and chase your dreams as well. Okay, let's go. Hello, hello. Welcome to a new episode of Digital Nomad Stories, the podcast. Today I'm here with Neil Parekh and he is the founder of Made This, and I asked him on the podcast because he has a really, really interesting business model, because he has a remote local business. So he runs a local business remotely, which I think is one, awesome, and two, I want to learn how. So I asked him on the podcast to share a little bit more about his business and about his digital nomad journey as well, of course. So Neil, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here.
Yeah, me too. I'm so excited to learn more about your story and also why you started this business. But first of all, can you tell us a little bit more about Made This?
Sure. So Made This is a cleaning company. So we focus on two niches. One is residential cleaning and the other is Airbnb cleaning. So I started it in 2013 when I was working in a corporate job, which I'm sure we'll get into. The way it's remote is the cleaners go straight from their home to the job site. So therefore, you just need to be in front of a computer coordinating things, and therefore you don't have to be present in an office space. So since we started in 2013, we started franchising the model to help other people have a remote local business. So we have two corporate locations, two franchise locations in the US right now, and looking to add probably 4 to 5 more of people who just pretty much want to copy my exact blueprint into your own city.
Cool. Really interesting. I'm also really interested in that you do the franchise model now, but let's first go back to when you started this. Like you mentioned, you were in a corporate job and then what happened?
Let's see, out of university, I got a job in corporate. So I was working in private equity, so venture capital for 4 years. And I actually liked it. It was fine. It was nothing wrong, but I'm sure we all are in a cubicle being like, how do I escape the rat race? And you see this picture of a dude with a laptop on a beach and you're like, oh, I want to be that guy, right? So I just went down the rabbit hole of blogs, ended up on the Tropical MBA podcast. And I was like, okay, I'm going to quit and travel. That's what I want to do. And I thought I'd just travel for a year. And it ended up becoming eventually 5 years, 6 years. So it just kept going from there. But I did, I wanted to have something to do at the beginning as a side hustle while I traveled, and also to help out my parents financially a little bit. So I was trying a lot of different things. Traditional stuff nomads do, right? Online drop marketing, shipping, e-commerce, drop shipping, microblogging, just anything which I was told online is a traditional nomad business, and nothing would work. So this is while I was at my company doing this as a side hustle. Finally, it was on Reddit and I came across a post of a guy who started a cleaning company. And so I thought, hey, I'm doing a bunch of other stuff. Let me try this. And it started to work. In hindsight, it worked because local competition is really not good, right? If you're competing against the entire world, for let's say online marketing or e-commerce, you're competing against the entire world. There's a lot of competition for your niche. With a local company, you're literally only competing against a local market. And on top of that, because it's already kind of a barrier right there, the local market doesn't know what they're doing. Most of these guys are really old school. So if you bring e-commerce, digital marketing, microblogging tactics down to the local level, you end up crushing it, which I only realized in hindsight. So anyways, we kind of grew. And I think we were doing around $30,000 a month in revenue when I decided to quit and go full-time in 2015. And then I booked a one-day flight to South America and just started traveling from there.
Wow, really cool. So what I'm hearing you say is be a big fish in a small pond.
Exactly. Better to do that. Absolutely. It's funny you say that. I always use that phrase that's exactly what this is you can use a lot of these tactics that a lot of us already know in that small pond. So exactly.
Cool. So how was that transition for you from being in a corporate job with a side hustle? So you must have been really busy, in a cubicle, also working in a cubicle most of the time in your corporate job, to then quitting and all of a sudden traveling with your own business. How was that transition?
Yeah, it was And a question for you, when did you start your nomad journey? How did you start traveling?
Yeah, so that is a difficult question because when I started, I was just traveling. And mm-hmm. then on the road, I didn't want to go back home. I didn't want to start my career, which was kind of what I promised myself. Like, oh, I'll just do this for a while and then go back yep. home, because I thought it was not possible. So I started my business like truly on the road. Mm-hmm. So I never really had this transition. That is also why I love asking this question.
Yeah. I think I geared up for like the duality of the lifestyle kind of work by working as a side hustle. Like my job was very busy, right? It was in finance, 50, 60, 70 hours a week. So I did this on the side. So I kind of already geared myself up to having like one thing and doing made this as the side hustle. Back then I was like, I didn't know what I was doing, right? Like I would go and cleaners want to get paid. I'm like, all right, just pull up in front of the corporate building, go down, get cash from the ATM, hand it to them. Like, ever thought I was a drug dealer because everyone saw me doing it, right? So like no clue what I was doing. So a lot of that kind of stuff I had to luckily systemize because I was going to leave, right? So because I was leaving, saying, hey, I can't hand people cash anymore. How do I actually fix this? So I was able to solve a lot of stuff just because I had the constraint of I'm not going to physically be here anymore. I can't be my own handicap. So luckily it was pretty systemized before I even took off. But it was interesting because like, and I asked the question about how you started traveling, because I'm sure all of us started traveling just by hostel hopping, right? Or at least a lot of us were doing that. And that's what I did when I went to South America. I was hostel hopping, which was so fun. You meet so many fascinating people and everyone's traveling, everyone's in a good mood. So I was working like in the common area of a hostel for months at the beginning when I was traveling. And you're not that productive, right? Because you're like maybe working part-time, checking emails, keeping like the bare minimum going. So I don't recommend starting a business in the common bar area of a hostel. But for me, it worked out fine where I was able to get hopefully the best of both worlds with probably less productivity. And from there, as the business started to grow, I realized, hey, I can't do hostels anymore. And also you kind of grow out of hostels as well. So then I transitioned to more like co-living places or finding an Airbnb next to a co-working space and actually having like a normal schedule was slowing down my travel. I wasn't doing 3 weeks in one country. I was doing 3 months in one country. So I think the type of travel changed over time. But that initial transition was very much part-time party at the hostel and part-time working. And it somehow worked, I guess, in hindsight.
Yeah. So you mentioned when you were traveling fast, you were just keeping the bare minimum going. When you then transition into more like Airbnbs, co-living, was that also when you focus more on growing the business?
That's a great question. I would almost say like my focus and desires changed. At the beginning when you're traveling, you're just so stoked. You're like, I'm out, I quit my job, traveling the world, I'm in the hostels, meeting fascinating people. So I'd say my focus was not exactly on growing the business. But after some time, you get burnt out from that. Like you don't want to stay in the hostel for years, right? So I'd say, yeah, when I started transitioning, it kind of happened naturally because when you have a little bit more peace and calm around you, a little bit more stable, you know, you go to a co-working space, everyone else is working. You meet nomads who are like having bigger businesses. It kind of paints the picture of, oh, that's normal, right? If you think about it, people who are at hostels, they're backpackers, they're travelers, they're on vacation. It's a very different mindset. So I think the bigger thing for me was just being around people who had that same mindset, meaning other nomads or other people who were local who were working at a co-working space. I think that definitely changed it for me.
That set the bar a little bit higher of like what to work on and what to strive for.
Yeah, like everyone around you is like saying, hey, we're staying here for like 3 weeks and working, you know, and we just go hang out and get dinner at nighttime. That's like, okay, I guess that's what we're doing. That just becomes normal, right? So it's definitely a product of your environment, I would say.
How is the business doing? Like you mentioned that it grew quite fast because competition was not doing a great job. But were there any like ups and downs? I don't know how that was for you, of course, because it's such a big difference in business model. But like if I look at my own entrepreneurship journey, mm-hmm. it was definitely that, a journey. And there were so many ups and downs. Was that for you the same? Can you share a bit about that?
I think with any entrepreneurship, there's ups and downs. Definitely. I'm trying to think of specific examples. So the story after I quit and, you know, hostling for a while, then transitioned to co-working, co-living places, the business still grew. I think we doubled that year. So it's a 30 to 60,000 a month and kind of kept growing from there. So to be honest, I don't think there was like this huge, like, oh my God, like everything's going to fall apart. However, we got to a size where it was just unmanageable. Like with the remote team, honest, like parts of it are great, parts of it are tough. Can't see everyone, you know, whatever it's doing. you try to overcompensate by just hiring more people, which causes more of a mess. So this is like 2019 where I was like, hey, this isn't working. Like, we're just throwing people at the problem and nothing's really working well. So there was going to be change no matter what in how we were doing stuff after 2019. Then instead of me making the change, the world decided to make the change for us with COVID. So like everything flipped anyways. So I'd say like, hey, those couple of years, things were shut down, especially on a local basis, right? E-commerce boomed by now. Local markets, like we had to shut down business for a while. We had to, a lot of cleaners weren't working. Customers didn't want people in their homes. The benefit of having a remote local business where your team is remote is like you could run a pretty lean operation, right? Like I think a lot of my peers in the local business had heavy overhead. They had cars, they had employees. With my business, we didn't. So we just scaled down and were able to still stay pretty lean. But that those effects, because you're in that local economy, lasted a couple of years, 2020 and 2021 with the labor crisis. So those were tough years for sure. So that was like ups and downs, and that had to do with more with the economy, I think, as opposed to the actual business model. And I'm curious from your perspective, for your business, how did that up and down go for you?
So for me, it was, I never really had any negative effects of COVID because my whole business is online. My clients are online. It's like the most online that you can be probably as a business. So I work in podcasting, right? So it's service-based. I did lose one or two clients because of COVID, but it was like not a major shift or anything. It was definitely not like it was for local businesses or tourism businesses, like businesses in a tourism industry or anything like that. So I was quite lucky. Like for me in my entrepreneurship journey, it also was a big shift because we couldn't really travel as much anymore, which I hated at the time.
Where were you?
Well, when the pandemic hit, I was in Thailand, and then we decided to get stuck on Bali for 5 months. And then after that, the visa process was getting really, really complicated and no one knew what to do. And we were like, you know what? I think this is a sign. Let's go home. Let's go to Europe, visit our families, and we'll see. And every time I was like, okay, next month we're leaving. But we kind of stayed way too long with family. And then at one point we're like, looks like we're not leaving anytime soon. We need our own apartment. So that's when we got a home base. And that was actually such a blessing in disguise, because for my business, I think there was nothing better that could happen. Just like all my focus went to my business, and that made it way more stable than pre-pandemic, which was also because it was just a really young business and I was also really new at the entrepreneurship thing. So that's not really weird, but I'm glad that I had that time so that now the business is stable and I can focus more on traveling. So for me, it was kind of a positive thing.
When the pandemic hit, I was like at 5 years-ish. It started to feel, honestly, for me, like I was going to a new country, but I was doing the same thing, which is never, it's not a bad thing at all. It was still fantastic and fun, but like the novelty clearly wore off, the lifestyle wore off. Nothing negative, but it's just like, oh, I feel like I'm doing the same thing right now. So when the pandemic hit and like now I have an apartment in LA, it's so nice having a home base. And I don't know how you feel, but I'm like, oh, this is great. I can leave my stuff here and I can like travel from here. So it's not as much of like the backpacker nomad journey anymore. I still do travel a lot, but it's kind of nice having a home base. It's been a different shift and it's like, oh, this is nice. I don't want to go back to backpacking.
Yeah, no, I have the exact same thing. It's so nice to just also leave your stuff here and not having to put it all in boxes again and then putting it in my dad's basement and like never being able to find anything because it's all in boxes in my dad's basement. It's so nice to have things.
Nice. Yeah.
Like, I have a blender.
I have plates. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I will say at the beginning though, like when you first started to travel, those, you know, 1-2 years, whatever, it is so fun just to backpack and like have no plans. You meet people, you're like, all right, cool, I'll just stay over here. So I would not trade that for the world at all. The beginning, I think, definitely good to have no ties if possible.
Yes, I agree. I definitely agree. I think in just first 2 years, you don't need a blender. But then at some point, you just don't know that you start missing it.
Yeah. Then you carry with you everywhere you go, like Anne does.
No. I try to travel with hand luggage only, which sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. But I definitely don't take my blender. But no, like you said, you can travel from the home base and then come back. So can we talk a little bit more about how that was for you to get the apartment? I know for me, I had kind of like commitment issues with this apartment. I didn't really want it. How was that for you to get that apartment? Was that easy, or did you also feel a little bit resistance and to like, ugh?
A ton of resistance. It was, I think the transition that myself and, you know, actually last month I went to Playa del Carmen in Mexico, and I met up with quite a few friends in the travel community. There was a conference going on over there, and we were all catching up, and it was so fascinating how many people said, hey, I have a home base now. And some people are like, now that the pandemic's over, we're in the endemic, everyone, a lot of people are traveling. So it's kind of the split. What I noticed was a lot of the people who were traveling for a long time who now stopped or like have a home base and they're gone from there, they all kind of had the same thing I did, which is more of an identity crisis during the time as opposed to like resistance to an apartment, right? Because if, at least for me, like the incorrect thought process was, if I'm getting an apartment, I am now back in the matrix. I am now normal. I'm not living abroad. Oh God, I have a normal life, right? That's the resistance, which is an incorrect thought process. This is whatever you want to make it. But it was more like a identity shift of, hey, I'm no longer a nomad. I am now Neil, I'm something else, right? I think that was the harder part to get over is, you know, and that's, I guess, a word of caution for a lot of people. Like, tying your identity too much to your lifestyle is always tough, because then how do you get out of it? And when you have this identity crisis, what are you going to do? And I think that's how it was for me and a lot of people in the community was, they're like, hey, I'm not a nomad anymore. Like, what am I besides a business owner? What do I do? So yeah, as deep and profound as that sounds, part of it is just like, that's life, right? That's just kind of what happened. So I think once I made that mental transition, then getting an apartment felt a lot easier after that.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, it felt like such a big commitment, because it felt like, okay, if I have an apartment, I need to be here. Like, I need to physically be in the apartment, and I cannot travel then. I don't know where this idea came from, but someone told me it's not a prison, it's just an apartment. Like, you can just leave if you want.
Yeah.
So I also had to make that mindset shift of like, okay, I can have an apartment, but still travel.
Yep.
I just have to pay rent. That's the only thing I sign up for, basically, that I pay rent every month. But other than that, I can basically do what I want. I don't physically have to be here.
Well, it's tough getting in the mindset of, oh, I don't want to waste money, especially when you're nomad. You're kind of on a budget, right? And you're constantly like, I can't waste money. And then here you are, like, having an apartment and leaving it there for a month. So I hear you. It's a weird mental shift.
It feels weird to pay rent twice, because you pay rent for the apartment and then also where you are when you're traveling. And that is something that I was definitely not used to. But for many people, this is actually very, very normal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you, like, now that I'm here, if you could afford it, that's the best. That's awesome. Yeah. If you could had a home base anywhere, it doesn't have to be in your home country anywhere. It's always nice.
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned before we start recording that you have your apartment until June. And then are you going fully nomadic again? Or what is your plan?
For a handful of months. And then I'll probably come back to LA. So yeah, my apartment's up in June. I'm actually going to go tentatively to Africa, which is not a normal nomad place. So I'll do Africa for a while, and then I'm probably going to go up to a co-living place and post up there and just work for a while, bounce around. So yeah, I'll be kind of nomadic for 3-4 months and then probably come back and get a home base. My family's from around Los Angeles, which is why I chose it. My sister, her kids, and my parents are getting older, so I want to spend more time with them. So LA will be home base after that.
Cool. I also wanted to ask you, I'm going to just switch the topic a little bit because I really want to ask this. How and when did you decide to make Made This also a franchise concept? Because that is also something that I haven't seen that much in the online business space. So I'm really curious.
Decided in 2019, I was trying to figure out how to expand Made This. I realized I don't want to self-expand. I spoke with someone at a conference and we're brainstorming ideas of how can Made This expand. And I'll give you examples. Starbucks is not a franchise. They've self-expanded corporate locations. Those are all corporate locations and they did that themselves. McDonald's is a franchise. They sell the rights to someone, that person opens up the store and grows that way. And on the other hand, another path would be like selling a course or something like that of, hey, how to start your own remote local business. So those are kind of the three paths in front of me. After evaluating them, I decided, hey, I don't want to run my corporate locations because, Kaylee, I don't want to manage 1,000 cleaners across the country, right? So like, I'd rather have the best service for the end customer, which is usually if someone's local or managing that operation. So corporate location was out. I had enough people asking me if we were going to be franchising or not, because they wanted to bring made this to their own city. And, you know, we had some property managers who said, hey, when are you guys going to come to this city? Since we're the only ones who specialize in vacation rental turnovers. So I thought it'd be better to have some skin in the game. And that's why I think franchising was a good model, where the way it works is you pay upfront a certain amount just to get right to the franchise, get through training, help you get set up. And afterwards, it's just a percent of revenue. So my upside is tied to the success of the franchise. Incentives are aligned. I like that idea as well. And also everyone can get under the Made This brand, and, you know, we can start getting larger contracts, things like that. So it was one method of expansion that out of multiple options. So that's one I'm currently pursuing. And hey, maybe in the future we'll decide franchising is great, but we're also going to do corporate locations. We'll see. But for now, I'm really enjoying the concept of franchising and having franchisees and helping them be remote as well.
So it's a bit of like the, it's a bit of both. Like, it's between corporate locations, but also between the online course teaching what you learned, right? Because it's still Made This location, but you also provide training. So it's a little bit like the in-between.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. I'll explain a little bit of a franchise system versus, like, let's say you buy a course. You buy a course, most of the time it's do it yourself.
All right. Before we continue with this episode, I just want to take a quick minute to tell you about a software that I found that is so, like, you need this as a digital nomad, period. It is called AnyDesk, and I'm going to tell you now what it's all about. If you're anything like me, I tend to overpack. So the challenge that I have now that I created for myself is to travel with only hand luggage. You don't need to travel with all your complete equipment and take all the necessary risks that comes with that. You can just connect to your main device from anywhere at any time. So if you have a computer at home and you just want to use your iPad on the road, or you just have a small laptop that you travel with, you can access everything that you have on your main computer at home super, super easily with one password using AnyDesk. It is so easy to use, and you can access all your software, licenses, everything on your stationary PC. And it has many, many other features. You can also easily and safely transfer files. Large files also, no problem, which is awesome. So I just wanted to share this quick tip with you. And you can go to the show notes and click the link there if you want more information about this awesome new software.
And I'll categorize this a few different ways. There's done for you, there's done with you, and do it yourself. So there's a lot of people here, I'm sure you're going to see courses online about how to make money, stuff like that. Typically, the price point for those three categories are going to be different. Usually, courses are do-it-yourself. You buy a course, you listen to the material, you do it yourself. You set up things yourself, you get going. Maybe there's a community for you. That's mostly what a course is. A franchise is a combination of done for you and done with you. Meaning done for you, tech stuff's done for you, website's done for you, a lot of the online marketing's done for you. Just a lot of, like, the back-end stuff is done. Done with you would be training done with you along with a business coach. And the whole life cycle while you're in the franchise, you get a business coach, someone coaching you the whole time to ensure your success. You get a lot of material, which could be self-training or done with you training. So it's a little bit more hands-on is kind of how I would describe it. So yeah, and you're kind of right. It's like corporate location combined with courses with more coaching. That's how I describe a franchise operation. And I guess we are a little bit unique in franchising, because if you think of franchises, most times people think of like physical storefront stores, like that's kind of how it is. We're actually one of the first and only fully remote franchise operations which exist. And our niche is Airbnb turnovers and Airbnb cleanings. We're the first ones in the franchise world doing that as well. So that was one reason I was excited to do is, hey, this is kind of an old school industry of franchising. We could get in and be like the new kids on the block as well. So
yeah, all these innovations in this space, like first by taking your marketing knowledge and your also e-com knowledge is what you said, I think. And then now also with franchising, your experience, like your entrepreneurship experience that you can also share. I think that's two big innovations that you bring to the space. That's cool.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. And it's not crazy hard to innovate a very old school industry. Like we talked about, like with, let's say cleaning or any home services. I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars in sales we made because people said, you're the only ones that pick up the phone or the only ones that call me back. Like it's truly incredible. the level of competition for cleaning services. And then also on franchising, on top of that, it's another old school industry. So that's what I like to do, is just be not even highly innovative, be normal. You just do normal in an old school industry and you're already going to be ahead of the competition.
Yeah, exactly. Like if the competition just does a bad enough job, then it's not very difficult to stand out, maybe.
Exactly, yeah. And what I think the secret is you can do that in the local market. People often think you're limited either by size or you're limited by like, hey, I have to be in the local market if I'm going to be local. With the way technology has progressed so quickly in the last 10 years, that's not the case. But the reality is most of these local companies started over 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So of course they have not innovated in that time. But nowadays, if you start companies now, you can be completely remote because there's things like Zoom. There's different ways to like learn. There's different ways to coach people, different ways to coordinate your cleaners. So there's lots of ways to be remote, meaning you can dominate local competition now. And it's still a very, very old school industry. So it's kind of that perfect storm in my mind.
So from these years running your team remotely and running your business remotely, what would you say is the key learning that you had that you can share with other people who are also looking to run a remote team?
Ooh, big question. On the remote team side, and there's so much because part of it is people think you don't need to focus as much on company culture. You got to focus way more on company culture if your team's remote because they're remote, right? So they could be doing anything. How are they going to have tie into your company? So a couple quick fire off learnings. Hire people full-time, don't hire people part-time, especially if they're remote. I understand it might cost more, but the reality is if they're working part-time, they're half dedicated to you at best, probably less because they're going to have a part-time job and the brain split. So a lesson learned the hard way. I think it's better just to hire people full-time, often helps to get labor for a little bit cheaper as well. Focus on company culture is another really big one of it. And also realizing that different countries have different specialties. I know a lot of people hire in the Philippines. We don't hire in the Philippines. But we have, for example, a team in South Africa. And then if you know anything about the South African accent, they have like a very British kind of Australian sounding accent. Americans love accents. So calls get routed to them for sales and Americans love it, right? And then on the flip side, in operations, a lot of our staff, they're Hispanic, staff meaning the cleaners. So their calls get routed to my team in Honduras, right? Because they'll speak Spanish and they can actually mesh with them well. So being strategic about where you're recruiting is also going to be kind of key. And that's something which is the beauty of the remote model is you actually get to be strategic. You don't have to just hire in your local market. You can be strategic with where you're going in the world. So those are a few things to keep in mind.
Is everyone in your company, they work full time for you?
Yes, on the operation side.
Okay. So yep. Not the cleaners, but all the remote
office
workers.
Yeah, the remote staff. Yep.
Okay, cool. And then you mentioned focus on company culture. What is the best way to focus on company culture when you work remotely? Because people cannot really see the company culture. Like you're not in a building where you kind of have a nice slogan on the wall or something like that.
Yeah. And look, by the way, the concept of company culture, your company has a culture, whether you know it or not. Your culture could be, hey, you come in, you do your work and you leave. And that's fine. A lot of people love that culture. Their culture could be a little bit, you know, more fun where like there's a lot of activity and joking going on. But like you as the founder get to set the tone of what you want it to be. If you just want it to be an efficient system, you come and you work and you leave. That's fine. Like you don't need to have like all these happy hours and stuff like that. You really don't need that. And I'll say, hey, we're not the best as it comes to company culture, but we do a lot of things just to make sure that the team members feel good and they feel taken care of. Slack is our central communication hub. So having that where everyone's on has been huge because you could interact and joke around with people and you kind of see people constantly. So being able to be in front of each other, whether like that's on Slack or somewhere else, I think that's the number one thing that's key as opposed to just like working in only like Asana or project-based stuff or only phone calls or only scheduled Zoom calls. You don't really get to see people. So having a Slack channel where people interact with each other is big. We do other things besides that, like, you know, we'll do group meetings on once a Friday just to kind of catch up. We have like a photo of the day in Slack. So there's other smaller things which happen, but the key is just making sure those correct people are in the same channel. And also you get rid of the bad apples early, meaning you got to know who's contributing to your company culture or not, especially when you're small. And anyone who is showcasing like not keeping things positive, I have a talk with them saying, dude, you can't do this. I'll give you one quarter. this needs to improve or I have to let you go. So being very, very protective of having a pause environment, I think is key.
Mm-hmm. But it's so difficult to let people go.
It is difficult. It's difficult. And yeah. I'll say, like, I have fired people who are great workers, but terrible to work with. It's just not worth it. And at the end of the day, this is your business. You get to set the tone of how you want it to be. It's not just all about money. It's about your happiness as well. So if you think about that, you actually get a pick who gets to be in your company. And I guarantee you there's so much talent out there that you will be able to replace anyone. So with that in mind, you probably should strive for people who fit the company culture the best, because you're going to be working there 8 hours a day. You might as well have an environment you like.
Yeah. What have you found to be the best way to find talent all over the world? Like you mentioned that you have a team. Part of your team is in South Africa. Part of the team is in Honduras. How do you find the best people?
Historically, it's been a variety of ways. The last couple of hires have only been through, one was referral. The other two were from dynamitejobs.com. Okay. So Dynamite Jobs is a website by Dynamite Circle, which is an entrepreneur community I'm part of. But Dynamite Jobs is a kind of a newer platform for remote work. So that's actually turned out some of the best candidates. Upwork's always there. Upwork, I feel like, is kind of like you just get an avalanche of applicants. The way I filter Upwork is at the bottom of the job description, I always write, like, you must write in your subject line, pineapple on pizza is weird, or I love movies, or like some secret phrase. And I will only look at the application if they write that. Even if it's the best application, but they don't look at that, I will not look at it if they don't write that. So that's one easier way to filter as well. But typically it's going to be Upwork or Dynamite Jobs. That's where I'm looking.
Okay, interesting. I have had some really good hires and some not so good hires in the past. I love asking this question to other entrepreneurs, especially when the team is all over the world. So I actually have another question about your remote team. So you mentioned that every Friday you meet for a team meeting or group meeting. Do you work synchronously or asynchronously most of the time? So do you work, like, do you have office hours where everyone is working, or do people just work when they want to work?
No, we have set hours for all the roles. And that's because we work during LA business hours for the company, right? It's a local company, meaning we service 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. So those are the hours people are on typically. The days of the week will change because we are open 7 days a week. So, you know, some people will stagger other people. So it's not like everyone's on at every single day. But yeah, because we have business hours, people are on at a specific time. And also because of that, I don't really need to do time tracking. Everyone checks on Slack in the morning and checks out at the nighttime, and you know if they're working or not. So that's been kind of nice.
Would that also be what you would recommend other remote entrepreneurs, to just have set business hours where just everyone is working so that you also get replies fast? And do you think it makes life easier?
It's a good question. I think it really depends on the business model, because I know some people truly don't care. And also that's kind of a perk of a job, is like, hey, come get it done. And as long as you get it done, I don't really care how many hours you spend. And as long as you have set meetings, I think that's fine. So I think it really just depends on the business model and what it dictates. For my business model, you have to be there at a certain time, because you can't just do something outside of business hours. So that's the reason I have it set. So no, I don't think I necessarily recommend it. It just depends on the case.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I've never had set business hours, but it's also because I'm in a different time zone than most of the clients. Mm-hmm. So most of my clients are in the US and then I'm in Europe. So it's already not the same hours, and I don't like working evenings, which is usually when the US is working.
Yep.
I also told my team, like, doesn't matter when you do it, just get it done in time and we're all good. And then we have a meeting every week. I'm always trying to improve, right? And hear other perspectives. So yeah, thank you for sharing how you run your team. Very interesting.
Yeah, of course. Glad to do it.
So Neil, last question I have for you. What is, like, what will the future of Meet This and you and travel look like?
Jeff, big question, man. Just dropping the big ones. I'll start with the first one, future of Made This. The goal is to expand to 4 to 5 locations this year, maybe 8 locations next year. I want to work with people who want to pretty much copy exactly what I did in a city in the US, you know, have a local business, but be able to run it from wherever you want. Pretty much, yeah, literally copy and paste what I did in your city. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
So do these people need to live in that city now and then they can go remotely later, or how does that work?
Not necessarily. I always think there's some benefit for a local business if you're starting, if you know the market, right? So it'd be very tough to open up a local business in some random place you just figured out. People do it, But there's some outsized benefits in my mind if you at least have connections to that market, meaning you could do test cleanings at your friend's place, right? Like there's just small things like that. So not necessarily, but it's always a little bit beneficial. So looking for people who pretty much want to have a remote local type of lifestyle, open up their own place in the US, that would be the initial goal for Made This and expand from there. Longer term kind of travel goals, at least for me, would be getting back on the road a little bit this year. But truly, and I'm enjoying having the home base, not traveling nearly as much. You know, now maybe the year will be 4 months out of the year as opposed to 12 months out of the year. And it's been kind of a nice shift for me, actually. So I'm enjoying that so far and kind of going to keep up the pace of, you know, 1 month out of every quarter, I'll be gone. And then besides that, I'll be, there's an apartment I pay for. So it's definitely different from a normal nomad lifestyle, but I'm enjoying it.
Right, exactly. What do you like about these shorter trips and then going to a home base? What do you like most about that?
I think it's a shift in priority. For me, I've been enjoying depth better. Meaning, and by that I mean, if I'm in one city, diving deeper into a friends group, diving deeper into maybe routines or like, you know, signing up for a co-working space, which has been really nice. Obviously, having an apartment to go to is always nice, but I think the depth of going deep into one city, and that city being kind of where I envision myself being longer term, has been really nice and rewarding for me. So that's been a benefit. And also just like comfort of always having a place to go back to. And it's something where when you travel, if you want to stay longer, you can stay longer. And if you don't want to stay longer, okay, you could just get a flight back and you have your place ready for you. So it's partially mental comfort. I'm just always having a home to go back to where you have your blender and you know exactly how it's going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Love the blender. Yeah. No, I definitely agree. I think just that headspace that you don't have to spend on travel and finding out where to go next and the next Airbnb to book and things like that. It's also really nice sometimes to just be able to just be home, not having to think about that. And then also making a conscious decision to go on a trip and do that for a set time.
Yeah. And what have you been seeing? You have your ear to the ground in terms of the nomad world. Are things opened up and everyone's running around like crazy again? Is it like 2019 and before, or has it completely changed?
Well, I think it's 2019, but on steroids. I feel like everyone is traveling right now. But also I see a lot of people on like shorter trips or a lot of, maybe I would call it part-time nomads with a home base, but then part of the year nomadic and other part of the year at a home base. I feel like most people have a home base now and also see the benefit of that more.
Question for you, if someone is not in their home country and they have a home base, are they nomadic?
Yeah, question for you, because I'm not in my home country and I have an apartment here. So I don't know.
I don't know the answer for that one, right?
I really think that if you want to be called a digital nomad, call yourself a digital nomad. Like I haven't traveled for like at all for a year and a half until a few weeks ago. And I still call myself a digital nomad. I mean, it kind of comes with the podcast, right?
Yeah, can't gatekeep it, but I'll consider you a nomad as well, right? It's a strange, I think it's more of a mental identity thing as opposed to actually physically where you are or not.
Right.
So yeah, it's just interesting when people are like, what is a nomad? I'm like, I don't really know what a nomad is now. It's kind of like if you're in that mindset, voila, you are a digital nomad.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's always interesting to see.
Right. I think it doesn't really matter. It's just also, what is a digital nomad? Like there's so many different lifestyles that people have as digital nomads. Like some people do fast travel, some people do slow travel, some people go to 3 countries in a year, some people to 50. Some people have businesses or remote jobs. Like there are so many different options.
Everything.
So I think there's not really one digital nomad lifestyle. You can really make it your own. So I think we also should just use this label, like this digital nomad label, just loosely.
I love it. Yeah, agreed.
Okay, we agree. Well, Neil, thank you so much for sharing your story today and telling us about Made This. I think it's so interesting to hear about your business model and also about your nomad career. Can you tell us where people can find you online if they want to learn more about Made This and also about you?
Yeah, sure. So if you go to madethisfranchise.com, M-A-I-D-T-H-I-S franchise.com, you can learn more about me at neilparekh.com, N-E-E-L-P-A-R-E-K-H.com. I'm pretty active on Twitter. So from there, you can find a link to my Twitter. I post a lot about travel stories, business stuff. So yeah, feel free to message me on there.
Cool. We'll also link everything in the show notes. So when you're listening, you could just go to the show notes, click all the links there, and follow Neil on Twitter and find out more about his business and what he's up to. Neil, thank you again. This was awesome.
Thanks, Anne.
And that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it very, very much. I would appreciate it even more if you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts for me. That way, more people can find this podcast, more people can hear the inspiring stories that we're sharing, and the more people we can impact for the better. So thank you so much if you are going to leave a review. I really appreciate you, and I will see you in the next episode.